We're talking to the sheriff of Milwaukee County, David A. Clark Jr., about early release programs in Wisconsin prisons. He wrote an opinion piece last week coming out against these programs.
Sheriff Clark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Rob.
Well, one of the arguments that's been winning over people to these early release programs is that they can save the community, local government, state government some money. Why don't you buy that?
Well, first of all, you know, there's two sides to many of these issues. And what I'm seeing lately is that we're only hearing one side. And I think that some of the language being used in terms of these early release programs, you know, they throw out cost savings, they throw out it improves public safety. But I haven't seen any empirical evidence evaluated by a third party using rigorous academic standards that verify these self-proclaimed success stories. I think these are more about satisfying a predetermined soft-on-crime agenda rather than promoting good public policy. And I say that because I don't think I've ever heard of an inmate program that has failed. And as you know, that's a statistical improbability.
And you think this is more wishful thinking than evidence-based?
Well, you know, you mentioned the cost savings. I think there's a shell game going on here because this early release program that was written about that I opined on had indicated that the costs are being shifted from incarceration onto probation and parole. And that's the shell game I'm talking about. That's not a cost saving, just moving money around. And now what you're doing, I believe, is you're taking probation and parole agents who already have unmanageable caseloads and you're overburdening them as well. So the thing that I find disappointing in this is that law enforcement executives have turned over the responsibility of fighting crime and strategies, effective strategies to do that, to intellectual elites in universities. Now, the problem I have with that is many of these individuals, they live in a cocoon, devoid of any of the realities of urban ghetto life. And they mainly only read about what's going on out here. And I'm talking about myself, a 35-year law enforcement veteran, urban policing, and I'm talking about the cop on the street. A lot of what's being offered is theoretical knowledge. There's nothing wrong with testing these theories, but that's really all they are. And the cops who have to apply these untested theories and the public that ends up on the receiving end of these experiments, and many of them do turn into a disaster, but they pay the heaviest price. And that's why I call this social engineering. And that's what upsets me the most. The petri dish for these theories and experiments has become the urban neighborhood. And what I find, and I've mentioned this too, I find this immoral because they're using human subjects as, you know, in their lab experiments. And I've done graduate level work. I attended graduate school at the United States Naval Academy post graduate school. And when I did my thesis, one of the things that we had to sign off on is that we didn't use human subjects in our thesis. And that's kind of what's going on here. So you know, all I'm really saying is I think it's time to start to poke and start to prod and peel the layers back on some of these social engineering experiments and find out exactly, you know, what's going on. They claim and they self-proclaimed success and so on and so forth. Maybe it's there, but I'm not seeing it. Just because somebody tells me these things work, I don't think is enough to, at least for my graduate level research. You can't just make the claim. You have to show your work, and I'm just not seeing it.
And your big worry, and one of the big objections to these early release programs, is that we might release somebody too soon. They'll create a danger in their community, maybe commit future crimes if we let the wrong people out early. Is that the bottom line worry that you have about this?
Well, that's a hypothesis I would offer, and that's all I'm doing here is offering a counter hypothesis here, because like I said, when these experiments fail, and they do. We hear about them in the news stories of some person with a long criminal history that finally goes out and does the worst possible act that can be done, and that's to take a human life. And then we see this arrest record that's in, you know, as long as my arm, and I got a 36 inch sleeve length. We see time and time again of leniency, a second chance, and a third chance, and a fourth chance, and of inmate programming. And I would challenge some of these claims that are made out of these early release programs. I would say, how many of the people that you're talking about in your claim of success have had previous attempts at inmate programming, have had previous alcohol and drug addiction counseling and treatment, on and on and on. And I'm all for helping people, but I'm also for inserting punishment in its rightful place in corrections and in policing, because we know that if you want a certain behavior, you reward that behavior. And if you don't want a certain behavior, you punish that behavior so you get less of it. So what we do is we take the career criminal, the recidivist, he gets arrested, and we don't punish him for what he did. And I'm not talking about draconian methods, but I mean, we don't punish him. We reward him with job training, with alcohol and drug treatment. Not that we shouldn't do that, but we're sending the message to that person is, you know what, you did something you shouldn't have done, and instead of teaching you a lesson so that you don't do that again, we're going to reward you with these things. So we're actually, you know, having the opposite effect on the mind of the criminal, who says, you know what, I can keep doing this, and what's going to happen is they're going to give me a second chance. I'm going to get to serve my time in the community with these, you know, these community corrections, on and on and on. And that's what their mind is processing, that crime, in fact, does pay.
Well, as I understand, at least some of the programs, like the one, I think it was in Racine, they're selecting inmates, nobody with, no sex offenders, no one with violent armed crimes in their background. They're doing a six-month substance program, and the offender has to have some kind of success in that program before they let them out. Does that give some room for, you know, measuring this and letting the right people out and maybe the ones who fail stay in prison? Is that so bad?
It's not a matter of if it's so bad. I would say if you just say we're not using sex offenders, and again, that's some of that language that they use so that, oh, no sex offenders, well, then you're not worried about it. That still leaves a lot of crimes that are included in this program. Even if you take out sex offenders and homicidal and gun charges, that still leaves burglars, that still leaves car thieves, that still leaves people who rob, you know, and I can go on, theft, you know, on and on and on. It still leaves a lot of people in that population. So I say that at least while a criminal is locked up, that neighbor that they're removed from gets a respite from the violence, the chaos, the pain and suffering that law-abiding people, many times women and children, have to endure while this individual's out on the street. Now, one of the problems that I have with this, and I believe it's a misguided approach, is that the neighborhoods that they're putting these individuals back into in the early release, Rob, they don't have the support structures in place or necessary for this individual to thrive. There are no jobs in these urban centers. We all know that. You look at the black unemployment rate in Milwaukee. There are no jobs to go back to. There is no family structure, and there's no caring attachment and other support type apparatus that this individual can then, you know, an infrastructure that this individual can latch onto and then springboard from there. So they're taking this individual and they're putting him back into this chaotic, dysfunctional environment, and they think with 6 months of treatment that this person's going to thrive. Rob, I wish human behavior worked that way. I wish it were that easy, but the reality is that it's not.
Is there a worry that if we don't try to do a program like this, give an incentive for inmates to give out, we're basically just writing them off forever?
No, we're not writing them off forever. First of all, you got to take this thing individually. So you have to look at these individuals, and they claim they're looking at them individually, but I'd look at the criminal history. And if this person is, let's say, 26 years old and has, you know, 15, 17, 18 arrests on their record, that is going to decrease the chance that a program like this is going to work. So I would expect that they would be a little more selective and not just say, well, it doesn't include sex offenders. And what I think should be done is we take that money, Rob, that we're spending after criminal behavior becomes ingrained and it becomes a lifestyle, I think we take that money and we apply it toward the front end on youth programs and on younger people before criminal behavior becomes a lifestyle. I think we're going to have, it'll be money well spent then after it becomes ingrained. Because once it becomes ingrained, like many of these individuals it is, or it has become ingrained, it's more difficult to reverse. So we're taking these millions of dollars to an individual, and then we're saying, well, we're providing, you know, a GED program and alcohol and drug. Why don't we spend the money on the front end with youth programs before they start using drugs? We're going to have a better chance at getting them or keeping them off them to begin with. Not everybody, but keeping them off to begin with, which is a lot easier than trying to reverse this thing early on. So I think what we need to look at, and I just want this whole discussion, I want everybody to be, instead of just saying, hey, we're trying this thing and it's working, well, wait a minute, maybe it is, but I don't think it is. I think I can prove that. Why don't we have this honest debate about who's worth this type of risk? Because when they claim that the people who've gone through their six-month program, and it takes a longer time than that to clean somebody out who's addicted to drugs and alcohol anyway, but let's say we without the program, 20% of the inmates who are released end up being rearrested, and with the program, 21%. I would say, well, that's such a minuscule result. That is that worth, from a cost-benefit perspective, is that worth the millions of dollars that we're spending? And then is that worth putting that individual that's, you know, with a 6% difference there back into, like I said, these already stressed communities to reoffend on women, children, on people who, you know, are just trying to live somewhat of a normal life. So I don't think we're being selective enough, and I really don't think we're being honest in terms of the assessment of these programs.
Sheriff Clark, thanks a lot for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
Rob, it's always my pleasure.
That was David Clark, Jr., Milwaukee County Sheriff.